One's a baller, one's a scholar, one's a baller, one's a scholar.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Asher Brothers Podcast. I'm Kirk, and Kyle is not here. I'm so sorry. It's not an April Fool's joke. Things got busy. We both had things to do, so we couldn't record a regular episode. So instead, I'm going to give you other stuff. I spent so much time recording all these other podcasts, might as well post them in two places. Why the hell not? So first up, we're going to give you an episode of NYPD Blue Balls, called True Confessions, Season 1, Episode 4, that features a longtime guest of this show, Papa Asher. The show's been really cool so far, and we don't have a large audience, but we have a dedicated audience, and that matters more. So I hope you enjoy this. Every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls will be on the website, asherbrotherspodcast.com, and it's on its own feed in iTunes, NYPD Blue Balls. So enjoy! Hello, everybody, and welcome to another NYPD Blue Balls. This episode, we're talking episode 4 of season 1, True Confessions. It opens up on John Kelly talking to the husband of the woman who's getting beaten.
Yeah, and the guy basically says, I beat my wife.
I don't think he did. I think he literally says exactly what he says, which is, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that is the 90s, that is the 90s wife-beating version of, I hit my wife, but you don't understand why I had to do it.
All right.
And let's face it, sometimes, you know...
She got shut mouthy. Up.
No, you're not going to convince me that it's okay to hit women.
She may have had it coming, man.
No, she didn't, and you know that's not true. The thing, I said I would do this last episode, and I guess we're doing it right now, right out of the gate, a minute in. I don't think that it's a simple, he's abusive, so she takes her destiny into her hands and kills him. I don't think that's it. I think she's trying to use John Kelly to kill him so that he gets killed, but she doesn't take the responsibility for it.
No, man, because later on in this episode, when she brings in her lawyer and they're all, and the lawyer's bullshitting around, John Kelly looks her straight in the eye and goes, you need to tell the truth. You're the one that's going to have to do the time, not him. And they leave. And then she comes back and with a guilty conscience says everything that happens.
No, that's not what he says. If you remember the episode, John Kelly...
Don't you remember? You don't remember.
First off, I have to talk about this. We're going way out of order, but...
Out of order.
Basically, he tells the guy that he quits. Later in the episode, she shows up at the precinct with her eye covered up and says, I hear from my husband that you quit. And he goes, yeah, I did. I'm not going to be a part of this anymore. Next time he does it, file a criminal complaint. Because the last time, it seemed like you asked me to commit a crime. And then she was like, oh, I didn't mean it. And he goes, hey, here's what you do. You threaten to leave him or you charge him. That's the only way you're going to get out of this. And she says, just because I'm affluent doesn't mean I have opportunity.
Yes.
That's important. Then he goes up, he gets a call, I think from his wife's bed. Then he goes to the apartment where the woman's there, also famous face, that's Wendy Malick from Just Shoot Me. She says, yeah, I mean, I did it in self-defense, I shot him. And he goes, tell me the story. And he listens super intently to what she says as she tells the story, and then he goes, okay, stop talking to me because now you are a suspect and I may have to arrest you. And she goes, why? He's like, because your story's inconsistent, and I can tell it's inconsistent. So just stop talking. That tells me he thinks that she just straight up murdered him. Not that he's worried about
Kirk,
it.
You're still not. Yeah, but then when she brings the lawyer in,
that's the next point.
They go at it, and he goes. He has all that info, and he says, "You're not telling the truth. You need to tell the truth because your lawyer's not going to do the time. You're going to do the time." So then she comes back and tells the truth and says, okay, he didn't attack me like I said he did, but he was angry and drunk because of what I had said, and I knew he was going to beat me.
And I could tell he was going to beat me again.
All right.
Because of the way that he had talked before and beaten me before.
All right.
But then she said, I grabbed the gun, and he was there. He came, was coming towards me, and then John Kelly says, were you going to shoot him when you had the gun in your hand? And she goes, I never thought about shooting him. It wasn't until he made his advance towards me that I pulled the trigger.
Listen to my words. This is where it goes 12 Angry Men. This is when I prove you guys wrong. In the interrogation room, it's Fancy, him, Hotshot Lawyer, and Mrs. Walker. And Hotshot Lawyer is doing his Hotshot bullshit lawyer shit where he goes, It'll only take me 4 minutes to convince a jury of 12 people that she acted in self-defense. And then John Kelly says, how much are you paying him to do this, basically? And she looks at him kind of strangely, and he goes, with an appointed city attorney, if you just admit to it, you will not have to pay a fraction of what you're going to pay this guy to hold up all this time, and guess what? If you try to go to bat with this, I am going to prove you wrong. And you will go to jail. He doesn't do that. He doesn't do that to save her. He does that to let her know.
I don't remember him saying, I'm going to prove you wrong.
No, he doesn't say that straight out. What he says is, if you go to trial with this, I'm going to work it, and I'm going to find out how to prove that you did this.
Okay.
And then you're going to go to jail, and he won't.
Yes. What I'm saying is I'm not saying that she didn't kill this guy. What I'm saying is she did kill him, but she lied about how she killed him because she felt threatened. And John Kelly knows that too. John Kelly knows that she was threatened and beat by this man.
I disagree.
Because why then would he go to the attorney and go to Sylvia Costas and go, what is that going to get her? And he goes, well, it depends on the judge. I'm misdemeanor too. And he goes, what's that? And she goes, 3 years. And he goes, but he could dismiss it. And he goes, yeah, it depends on the judge. Why would he then give a shit how long she's going to be in jail for?
I think because he wants her to go to jail. Because he realizes...
No, he doesn't. He realizes...
He works it so she doesn't go to jail for longer.
He realizes what a monster she is in the apartment with her husband dead. Because he says, what happened? And he heard the story. And he's like, this is what a person who wants to kill their husband makes up to do it.
Nope.
Because there's no sign of struggle. There's none of that. She just shot this guy, and she wants to
Of struggle. She's got a shiner.
That's from the night before.
What
he
I'm
says
saying,
that.
Kirk. After she shoots her husband,
mm-hmm.
John Kelly's talking to her, and she's telling the story, and he goes, okay, you need to stop right there because I'm going to have to arrest you. And she goes, why? He's like, well, you murdered this guy because your story's inconsistent. There's no close powder residue. There's no scratches on you. There's no sign of a struggle. Then they come back, and the lawyer's like, well, you did this, blah, blah, all that bullshit. And then John Kelly goes, look, this guy doesn't have to do the time that you're going to have to do if you go to court with this. You need to tell the truth. You need to tell the truth. So then she comes back and says, okay, I lied. I shot him. But the reason I shot him is because I felt threatened. He came home drunk like he had before. He was talking to me in a certain way. I went and got my gun. I never thought about shooting him. It wasn't until he got aggressive and made advances then I shot him. Then John Kelly goes, okay, great, that's good. How much time is she going to get? Because she's telling the truth, and I hope it shouldn't be more than like a month or something.
Okay.
John Kelly's looking at it that way. He's not looking at trying to get her more time.
Well said.
Okay.
Well said.
Okay, so you agree with him.
Oh, yeah.
Let me give my version of what happened.
We heard your version.
No. Let me give you the full version of what happened. And if you want, you can go rewatch the episode and look for the
you
things I'm telling you.
You go rewatch the episode.
No.
Kyle and I have a firm grasp on what happened. You need to go watch it.
Oh, no. He shows up to the apartment.
I just think that you don't believe her because of the way she delivers everything. She doesn't deliver everything like she's been beaten, which she doesn't deliver it well. She delivers it like a scared rich person instead of delivering it as like someone who's been abused for a while.
And then when John Kelly realizes that she's lying, his tone completely changes in the way that he talks to her. He tells her to shut up. He tells her to shut up. He then uses that point in the room.
He told her to shut up so she wouldn't say something that could be used against her.
That he would have to testify for. She said that.
Not that he didn't believe her. He was trying to protect her.
I disagree. I think you can watch the episode.
He didn't believe her story. He told her to shut up because, one, he didn't believe the story, but he believed that she didn't kill him just to kill him. So she told him to shut up. He told her to shut up because he didn't want to have to testify against her with the bullshit story that she made so it would get her in trouble. That's why he told her to be quiet.
Okay.
I mean, we can leave it because we've spent way too much time. But I think what actually happens, I think he realized halfway through this situation, she's actually a little more insidious than she appears. We don't need to argue anymore. This isn't the Republican debate. We don't need to bicker about stupid shit. It's just...
No, but let me... I just want to say one more thing and then I'm going to let it go. If John Kelly wanted her to have more time, why when he asked Costas what the charge was going to be, and she said manslaughter too, and he goes, okay, how long is that? And she goes, 3 years. Why would he then go, but a judge could throw it out, right?
He wants to make sure she gets some time, but he thinks it's possible that the judge will throw it out. I guarantee it. Watch the episode with the idea that John Kelly figured out that this woman did it on purpose. Just watch it with that thought.
I watched the episode like 3 hours ago. There's no way that he wants her to do more time.
I disagree.
He wants her to go to jail. There's no way.
Let's talk about the rest of this episode, because a lot of cool stuff happens in this episode.
Okay, so Sipowicz has to work with somebody that doesn't want to work with him.
I have his name. Wasn't it Walker?
Walker. Detective Walker. One of my favorite lines Sipowicz says is, he's talking about working with Walker, and Kelly's telling him, like, you gotta just get back on it. You gotta show them that you're working well. He goes, I have to exhibit a continuous positive approach, even with this dim bulb here.
And then when the guy's like, Sipowicz, Kelly, you're working back up with me. And then he goes, my pleasure, with his coffee cup.
And then Kelly looks
at him, and he's like, was that not positive enough? Should I have said, my pleasure, rootitootoot?
Rootitootoot.
And then
immediately after that, they go out on this case, and uh-huh. Kelsey wants to have a heart-to-heart in the police station about where her and John are, which is another point that she's fucking crazy.
Kyle thinks that Kelsey's crazy.
She's psycho. She's got, like, you weren't here for the first two episodes. She's crazy. They fucked once and hung out, like, twice in the first two episodes. It's been, like, 3 days, and she's already telling this man that she's in love with him.
She's psycho.
That's weird. That's weird.
And
so then they go to the crime scene, and then Sipowicz says my favorite line of this episode. He keeps giving Walker information, and Walker doesn't want to hear it. Walker's trying to not even listen to Sipowicz's stuff. And Sipowicz gives him something, and Walker goes, yeah, whatever. And he goes, hey, Walker, we don't have to hold hands, but would you mind not talking to me like a Timmy the Laundry Boy?
And then Walker, like a total dick face, he goes, Kelly, a word, and walks like 2 feet to the left, as if Sipowicz isn't gonna know it's about him. And then he walks behind after Kelly goes, why don't you give him a fair shot? And then he walks up behind him and goes, is this something the whole class can enjoy?
Yeah, is this something the whole class can enjoy?
What I enjoyed about that whole scene is Walker tells Kelly, I'm not gonna take any shit from your fat friend. Walker is 10 times fatter than Sipowicz. Walker's gut, he needs suspenders for his pants. Sipowicz does it, and he's calling Sipowicz fat, which was weird to me.
So the case is, it's a double homicide that's a robbery at like a bodega or a liquor store.
And a bodega, that's what they call them here.
And all of the witnesses say the guy is
6'3". One guy says he's 5'9".
They find one mugshot that a guy goes, I think that's him. So Walker's all on it, even though the guy is 5'9". And then this becomes kind of a running thing of the episode where Sipowicz is so visibly frustrated that he's listening to an idiot whose work ethic is bad. Which is something that, I mean, if you push away the entire show, that's something everybody can relate to, is going to a job and working with people that just are bad at their job, but you have to work with them to exhibit a positive attitude, as Sipowicz says.
But the thing is Walker makes Sipowicz show the mugshot to the people he's interviewed, and they all say no.
Right.
But Walker still wants to go after this guy.
Yeah.
And then when they find the guy, one of the physical descriptions is that he has a mustache, and Sipowicz goes, oh, you see that, John? Where's the mustache? And then John's like, well, he could have shaved.
Basically, Sipowicz is coming out of, like, a shop or something on the street, and he's getting into the car with Kelly. And when he does, he goes, oh, yeah, Lower Manhattan. That makes sense, John, because if the guy lives over here, it's only, what, 14 subway transactions until he gets to the... And it's
he goes, yeah, Bentonhurst, John. This is the likely locale. The guy lives here, wants to rob a liquor store in downtown Manhattan. All he's got to do is make, like, what, 9, 10 subway transfers? Well, maybe he had business downtown and came back and did the store then. Yeah, right. Maybe his doctor down on James Street, huh? The one that gives him hormone injections that pump him up to 6'3 when he's about to pull a job and then shrink him down to his normal 5'9 right after.
Now, they pick up this guy. There's a struggle. They basically resist him and put him down on the ground.
Well, he punched Walker.
Yeah.
To get away.
And they didn't really... he punched the cop.
This is... But here's the thing that's crazy is in later episodes, Sipowicz beats people for more, beats people for doing less than punching a cop, which was weird. I feel like you see in other TV shows when you strike a cop, that's it's over. Like, the guy gets beat up, and this guy, nothing happens to him, which I found pretty weird.
To go with the story, so then they bring him into the room, and Walker's running the room, and he's doing a terrible job.
Yes.
Because Walker's too hot-headed, and the guy gets pissy with him. And then Sipowicz tries to do good cop, and the guy just totally calls it by going, "Oh, am I supposed to love you?" Because Sipowicz tries to relate to him because he knows that he has a daughter who's sick. And basically the guy sees right through it and like says, "Go fuck yourself." And everything's pointing at this guy. Yeah. If it wasn't for this tip made on a phone call that Sipowicz runs down, and because obviously Sipowicz cares about this guy and his daughter, they would have never found the real guy, which, like, they go down to the bar, the guy who made the tip's actually there, Sipowicz sees him right away, and then they don't interrogate him, but they ask him the right questions to figure out who this guy is. And when they do, they go pick up this dude who, he's resisting and he's being an a-hole. Sipowicz goes, "Oh yeah, that wasn't you. The guy that's exactly your height with the fake mustache and this gun, that ballistics is gonna match up with the two people that are dead in there. And if you," he said, "if you hit my shoes one more time, I'll fracture your skull," because the dude threw up on his shoes. This is another moment that shows how good Sipowicz is, because Walker says, "You're only doing this to embarrass me. You want to show this whole department that I'm like I suck, and you want to take the collar." And he goes, "Look, as far as I'm concerned, this is your guy. I just want to make sure that the right guy got it." It shows that he's a stand-up dude. And then later in that same episode, they go to a bar for a guy's, like, I don't know, a racket. Like, I don't know if he's retiring.
He's getting married. Someone's getting married.
And Walker's at the bar getting a drink, and it's clear that he's a functioning alcoholic. Because he says, "Oh, it's only after 5.
Right.
But it's, yeah, that makes his line really in clear. The sand.
They make that really clear.
That he has a drinking problem. And Sipowicz, it shows Sipowicz going like, "Yeah, but drinking problem, that's not me anymore. I'm going to be clear-headed about it."
And well, then he asks Sipowicz, "What's it like being..." And he goes, "What do you mean, what's it like?" He goes, "Being sober. Or getting sober." And then Sipowicz says, "Well, it's easy when the first 3 days you're in a coma."
Yeah. So, two things. Sipowicz gave up the collar to that guy because Sipowicz's main motive is just to make sure they get the right guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's him throughout the whole series.
Yeah, he never gives a shit about credit, and he never gives a shit about numbers.
Right? He just wants to do the right thing. The thing that I didn't like about that bar scene is he asked that guy, "Do you want to ride home?" And the guy says no. He says, "Okay, later."
No, the guy says...
The guy says, "No, I'll be okay." He goes, "I always drive extra careful."
Right, right.
"I have a few."
Right, and then Sipowicz just leaves. Now, being an alcoholic and knowing that this guy's been sitting there pounding him down, should he have taken that so easily?
Also, the
Sipowicz
party...
Sipowicz doesn't know... The thing is Sipowicz doesn't have the tools yet to deal with people, other people who are alcoholics, because he hasn't gone to the AA yet. And that's also made point in episode 3 when Fancy's like, he's like, "I haven't had a drink." And Fancy's like, "You going to AA?" He's like, "No, I'm doing this my own way." And Fancy's like, "Look, sitting at home, gripping your couch not to have a drink doesn't mean that you're sober. Like, dry is different than sober." So Sipowicz doesn't necessarily, like, Sipowicz wants to help, but I don't think he has the tools to help an alcoholic yet. And I also, at the same time, I think he realizes he has his own shit to deal with, that he's not, it's like, "Hey, you need help?" "No, okay, I gotta go deal with my shit, I'm out." Like, I can't be in this bar anymore, because otherwise I'm gonna have a drink.
He's also leaving a party early. Like, we don't know how long that party is, and from what it looks like, it just, like, he showed up just then, had, like, one conversation with Kelly, and then left.
Yeah.
Well, that could mean then that the party's going to happen for another couple hours. If he gets a taxi for or something for him right then, that'd be, well, rude, because he plans to stay there a little bit longer. Also, if the bartender's a good bartender, he'll make sure that he gets... Well, no, it's not his job. But somebody else... It's not necessarily Andy's responsibility, because he just came in to say hi, and he doesn't know how to deal with another alcoholic yet, because Kyle said he doesn't know about alcoholism. He just doesn't want to drink
anymore. But again, I think it's also part of the time where... And it's also they're grown men, and I think Sipowicz also has that feeling of like, hey, he's a grown man, and if he doesn't want my help, I'm not going to tell him he has a problem. Because in other episodes before that, you see when Kelly tries to help Sipowicz, Sipowicz is like, leave me the fuck alone. I didn't ask for your help. Like, you can help me when I ask you for it. Don't step in and say that I need help and I have a problem. That's not your choice to decide that. What I need you to do is I need you to just leave me alone, let me drink, and then I'll deal with it on my own because I'm a grown man. And I think Sipowicz has that mindset too. Like, that guy's like, no, I'm fine. I don't need your help. So Sipowicz is like, okay, that's fine. That's how you want to be.
Also, this episode, we have the end of a character. It's the last episode of David Schwimmer, Dr. Geller, from Friends. Because
he gets shot.
He gets shot on a subway, was it?
Yeah, on the train.
Because over the last couple episodes, he's been obsessing about this gun because he feels powerful.
Right.
And he sees, like, a woman being held up, and he pulls out the gun, and the kid just, like, takes it off of him and shoots him.
Well, this is also at some point in the episode where he wants Kelly to give him the report on his case because he wants to write it up for his alumni letter.
Yeah.
And Kelly basically tells him, like, hey, man, you're making this shooting way too much about your life. Like, you have other accomplishments that are way more important than the shooting. Focus on those. Don't focus on the shooting.
It's another one of those, like, really well shot moments, because they do those shots in a hospital where people are, like, waiting, and then they get bad news, and then, like, the way they shift the tone of the... It was really, really good. It was also exactly what... It's one of those self-fulfilling prophecies that NYPD Blue does, where basically two episodes ago Kelly says, if you're not ready with the gun, someone's going to take it from you and shoot you. And that's exactly what happened to David Schwimmer.
Foreshadowing. I think it's what they call that.
But no, it's with
in
NYPD
artistic
Blue.
World.
When
in this episode, Wagner, the chick that he's guarding, shoots her husband.
Wagner, that's
4B,
right.
4B dies, and Walker doesn't want to work with Sipowicz. That's what happens this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another crazy-ass thing that LaCalce does at the bar. So LaCalce hears that Kelly got the Wagner lady. This is another reason why I think Kelly didn't want her to do a lot of time, because LaCalce goes, oh, this lady shot someone that was hurting her and, like, was threatening her livelihood, but you're okay with that. But when I do it, you can't love me and can't be with me, but you show her special treatment, and Kelly never denies that. So that's another reason I think that shows that Kelly wanted to get this lady off. And then LaCalce's like,
in more ways than one,
I killed Angelo Marino.
Jesus.
And then she leans across the table and kisses him like a friggin' psycho, and then just leaves.
I would agree.
What did you say? What did you say, Dad? You blacked out. I couldn't hear you.
You said he wants to get her off, and I said in more ways than one.
No, I don't think so. I think he didn't find her attractive.
Really?
Is he blind? No. Because here's the thing. The way he's rolling in this show, if he wanted that poon, he would have gotten. like the way he's rolling. I mean, he screws his ex-wife again in this episode, and then they argue about the fact that she's going to go work for narcotics.
Yeah,
and
I have
it's all pissed off about that. And then there's another thing. 4 episodes, this bitch has had 3 different jobs. Like, when does someone go, why are you bouncing back and forth from jobs like this? What the fuck's the deal? Like, why can't you stay in one spot? Like, what's the problem?
That scene that you're talking about at the bar is proof that LaCalce's crazy, because she's had a few. And she goes, like, I heard about the rich lady. She gets jealous of a lady that he worked a case on, but then she just says out loud, I killed Marino, and says it in a crowded bar.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
She's obviously crazy enough.
One, she loves him.
No, that's
two,
insane.
Her conscience got to her.
No, I...
She had to. She had to... what do you call it?
If I were to make a case...
Confess, for, right there. She couldn't hold it in anymore.
If I had to make a case for LaCalce, she's going a little nuts because she cannot talk about any of these problems to anybody but John Kelly, and John Kelly doesn't want to talk
to
her.
And he doesn't want anything to do with her.
That's what would make her a little bit crazy. However, that craziness is official insanity when you're not even concerned about admitting to a crime that will get you in prison pretty quickly. The admitting to
but
a murder of a dude.
It's not because Giardella admitted to killing him. So if she was to come out and be like, oh, I killed Marino, they're going to go, no, you didn't. Giardella admitted to it. That case is closed. We're moving on. Like,
and
we're out.
The reason she can't say anything now, she literally can't say anything, is because if she proves that she killed Marino, everything that Giardella said now comes into question. They can't use him as a witness.
Yeah, that's true.
So now she's in this place where she can't even admit to what's wrong because then it throws off everything that that dude had said.
Well, that's true.
So
I get you on that.
So, like, I when you say she's just crazy, I agree she's crazy, but she's crazy because she has all this...
She was crazy before she killed Marino, dude.
That's what led to killing him.
Is her crazy?
Yeah, like her same psychotic just don't crazy kill I'm in love with John Kelly led her to want to kill this guy.
Well, Kyle,
it pushed her even farther.
Who isn't in love with John Kelly? I'm pretty sure at that ball with that husband and wife, when he meets the mistress, I'm pretty sure the mistress wanted to get down with that ginger.
I'm glad he leaves after this season.
Yeah, I'm glad he leaves too. I don't like him. Is there anything we missed? Anything we need to talk about for sure?
Is it this episode where Sipowicz goes into the interrogation room and says, I'm going to take a dump on your day.
I don't think so.
Your mom just gave you a...
Yes,
oh, that's
he did.
The third episode.
Yes, he did.
That's the third episode. The third episode.
He goes, I'm going to take a dump on your day. And he sits down and he goes, your mom just gave you up.
With a big smile.
I think this is my favorite, one of my favorite early Sipowicz episodes. Because Sipowicz is best when he's not allowed to do what he does best. Because when you watch the show, every time something is like up against Sipowicz, like every time like there's like something that's making him stressed out, he comes out with these one-liners, like all day, where it's just like, oh yeah, well you're a piece of shit, and like he just attacks everybody, but he's very clever with it. This is a great one because he has to work underneath this Walker guy. So every time this Walker guy says something, Sipowicz goes, yeah, well, Walker just finished painting the bullseye on the wrong guy. Shit like that.
Yeah.
Shit like that, where the way he talks in situations when he's stressed is so funny.
Well, Sipowicz is by far the best character ever on television.
Yes.
What? Okay, so Kyle just agrees with that, too. Best character ever on television.
Yes.
I think so.
All characters. Better than Walter White.
Better.
Yes.
Better than, well, yeah, that's true. Better than Bubbles from The Wire.
Yes. Come on.
Bubbles is a pretty awesome character.
Yeah, Bubbles is an awesome character, but he's not Sipowicz, man.
Sipowicz was awesome and sustained that awesomeness.
For 12 seasons.
He's
the only
Granted,
reason that...
Season 12 got a little bit...
It got a little bit buck wild on season 12,
like, you could just stop at season 11 and never watch season 12, and it's you don't need it.
It'd be okay, right?
Because they just like there's like 17 new bosses, and then there's all the like it's like just end it. There was no need to keep going just to keep going.
I think there's a way to edit season 12. Like if you took the first 10 episodes and edit it
and threw them away
and edit it into like one episode, and then use the back half. It's actually like decent, but yeah, that's true.
So I think my reason for saying this, every episode that Sipowicz is in, something good is going to happen.
Well,
he hasn't had I don't know of any episode where you go, wow, he sucked in that one.
Well, he's in every episode, Dad.
Right. But there isn't one where you walk away going, he sucked in that.
That's true.
I told Kyle on the first episode, and I think we'll be saying it a lot, or I'll be saying a lot. Sipowicz and Dennis Franz, the guy who played Sipowicz, is such a perfect match. Like... When they did the casting,
you know Dennis Franz?
No. I'm saying,
I called them today and said, hey, you and Sipowicz were a perfect match. Perfect match. He was like, oh, totally.
You know what I mean? If they just cast that as another David Caruso, right? Or if that was Jimmy Smits and David Caruso was Kelly, right? Right. It wouldn't have been as good. You would agree. But because it's Dennis Franz, it's Sipowicz, because he knows how to play that kind of character, it's so good. That's why it lasted so long.
Well, it's kind of like Cranston's made to be Walter White.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Michael C. Hall was perfect for Dexter.
Well, the first four seasons.
Yeah, well, you know, that's writing. And producers.
You know they're bringing Dexter back?
Yeah, I know.
They are.
And we won't do that show because that show started to suck balls.
I don't know what they're going to do, if it's going to be a prequel or a sequel scenario, but they're bringing back Michael, whatever his name is going to be.
Michael C. Hall.
No, do we have any segments? We pretty much said our favorite lines.
I mean, I said the famous faces, David Schwimmer, Wendy Malick.
We could ask Dad, MFK, since he wasn't here the first episode.
Okay, we can ask him that. But another famous face, I don't know his name, I'd have to look it up. The guy from The Big Lebowski that does the dance.
Yes.
That asked the dude for rent. I don't know his name. I wish I said it. I'll find it. Well, Dad... While we do the MFK. Kyle, do the MFK for Dad. I gotta.
Okay, Dad, do you know what MFK is?
No.
Okay, it's marry, fuck, kill. So what you do is we're going to give you three people, and you have to choose out of those three people who you're going to marry, who you're going to fuck, and who you're going to kill. Okay?
Really?
The three people are John Kelly's ex-wife, LaKelsey, or Lois the prostitute.
I don't know who Lois the prostitute is.
What? She's the lady that set up Andy to get shot in the first
episode.
Oh,
yeah. And what are the three things?
Marry,
fuck, kill.
Marrying his ex-wife, and I'm killing the prostitute.
Okay, fair enough. So you want to fuck Psycho is what you're saying. Okay.
No. But fair enough. If I don't, then I have to do one or the other.
That's true. And like Kirk said, that prostitute's probably got a whole bunch of diseases you don't want.
Exactly. That's why we just eliminate her. So then it comes down to which one do you want to be stuck with forever? LaKelsey or the ex-wife?
LaKelsey? Is that did LaKelsey and Lebowski get married or what?
I don't know what her name is. The black-haired chick.
LaKelsey.
Kelsey. Whatever. Fuck.
God damn it. I just want to find this guy's name because I feel so bad.
I don't know why you're worried about the guy's name.
Because I feel like...
You think he's going to get pissed off?
I mean, when
he listens to it,
he's going to get pissed off.
Well, I mean, you got to give credit where credit's due. He did a good job. He also did a good job in The Big Lebowski. I don't know his name, but you know what? He murders it.
How come we don't have any sound effects?
How come we don't have any sound effects?
Yeah.
I got worried about possible... A copyright infringement.
Yeah, Kirk's worried that the powers that be over
gonna
at ABC
hunt you down in this apartment room and bust your ass for putting a boing on there.
No, because I wanted to have the show start with the NYPD Blue song, and I'm still considering that once we get to episodes where they do previously on NYPD Blue, that's how the episode starts. But I don't know. I feel like it'd be really uncool to get a cease and desist letter from.
Then you cease and desist, and it's done.
But then I'd have to go back and edit out from the other ones.
The guy's name is Jack Keller.
Jack Keller. Jack Keller,
you murdered just to let you know, I did that on my phone in like 20 seconds.
Okay, well, my phone's not on the Wi-Fi, and I tried to use the computer, but it's very far away, so it doesn't pick
it's
up on the microphone.
It's far away. It's at least 3 feet. So far away.
Well, since we're at the point where we're just making fun of me for entertainment, is there anything else we want to say before we leave?
I don't got anything to say.
Nothing? Nothing else?
Nothing else.
We hit everything? All right, well, I'm Kyle. Actually, I'm Kirk.
You're Kirk, I'm Kyle.
I'm Kyle.
And that's Dad, and this has been NYPD Blue Balls.
With the Kyles.
Look next week for episode 8. Wow, numbers, I'm losing it, man. I need a
nap. I think that's because your computer is so far away.
Oh, Jesus. Episode 5 next
Only
week.
Only one thing left to say. Burrito.
Burrito.
What the fuck is that?
That's when you would just come into the room and scream it into my face. Burrito! Dad thinks that's hilarious.
I don't think I ever did that.
Okay, you did, but...
I don't think so.
Yeah, you did. You absolutely did.
All right. You did. You did.
Later, everybody.
And that was NYPD Blue Balls, Season 1, Episode 4, True Confessions, featuring Papa Asher. Once again, every episode of that will be on the same website as this show, AsherBrothersPodcast.com, and it's in its own feed on iTunes, NYPD Blue Balls. Up next, we have a completely different show with other people called Apathetic Gentlemen. It has these two dudes named Ben and Zach, and we sit down and we talk almost at an academic level about random things. Could be video games, movies, TV shows, random pop culture, writings, philosophy, poetry, really anything. And this episode that I took the main segment from, it actually includes Ben's wife, Alex, and we're talking about the first Harry Potter book and movie, The Sorcerer's Stone. I really like doing the show. It's a lot different than Asher Brothers, just because it's more structured and less inappropriate. So, a little better for the whole family. I still curse in it. I don't really have a filter. I'm kind of like the Kyle of this show, which is very, very, very strange. So listen up. If you're interested in this show, you can go to apatheticgentleman.com or search iTunes for Apathetic Gentleman, and you can find it there. We do have a Twitter account, Apathetic Pod or Apathetic Pod, depends on how you read it. And we do have an Instagram, Apathetic_Gentleman. So you can look us up there if you like the show. Anyway, here it is.
Hey guys, this is Alex. I'm an optimistic wife, the optimistic wife, not sure. Here we are. We're here today. We're going to be talking about Harry Potter, specifically The Sorcerer's Stone.
The first movie, the first book.
I'm not sure.
Harry Potter in general.
I mean, yeah, Harry Potter in general. We kind of are. Oh, we're also doing a sneak surprise sorting quiz. Well, we already did the sorting quiz, but we're finding out whose house everybody's in.
Because if you don't know which, I mean, if you live in America, you should know about Harry Potter. It's a very
America.
If you live in an English speaking country.
Yeah. If you live in
it's
a country that has
into
books.
Like 100 languages, so.
If you live on Earth,
yeah.
It's safe to say you know who Harry Potter is.
But the sorting hat's actually a great idea because that's what the kids do. Because the whole book series is told through the lens of Harry Potter.
Spoiler alert.
Who doesn't know he's a wizard until they basically go, "You're a wizard," and then bring him to Hogwarts.
You're a wizard, Harry Potter.
So we sorted into our houses. We're going to talk about that later. But I think, I mean, it's Alex's show, but
yeah,
I want to know, because Harry Potter is very important to two people here. And I want them to talk about their fandom of Harry Potter, just because I don't understand it.
Okay. Zach, do you want to go? Well, it's me and Zach, the two nerds, right? That's who we're talking about.
Yeah,
Ben, of course. Ben not is also a nerd.
Yeah, but we're not Harry Potter.
Not about okay. Harry Potter.
We're not Potterheads.
I guess, I just... Like, how could you not be? I don't know. I don't get it.
Because it involves reading.
You're so smart. You like reading.
I know, I
do. You have a degree in psychology. Like,
yeah. I like to listen to people. I don't like reading.
Okay, whatever. So, Zach, do you want to go first on how you started out with Harry Potter stuff, or...?
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Lay it on.
I started reading the books before I saw it in the movies.
Okay.
It's probably... When... The first movie came out in, what, 2001?
I don't... Yeah, maybe.
Something like that.
The first book came out in, like, the 90s. I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't read the first book while it was current. I think I read it, like, after the third one came out.
Yeah.
And I caught up and then just read with them every year.
Mm-hmm.
But what I loved about Harry Potter was I was reading it when it was, like, I was growing up with the character,
yeah.
Basically. I was always around the same age as Harry in every book that was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of, like, cool. Like,
definitely.
I was awkward as a kid, and I had some pretty awful friends that were pretty mean and stuff. So my escape was Harry Potter. It was this world that I jumped into and really, like, fell in love with.
Yeah.
And it just allowed me to kind of grow in a different way.
I feel you. I feel like that's kind of why it's, like, so powerful to a lot of people our age, is because we really kind of grew up with the series. Like, I think I was 8 or 9 when I read the first books, and they only had out to the Goblet of Fire, the fourth book. And then, so, yeah, it's like, as I, you know, went through middle school and high school, I kind of just tracked with the story. And
well, yeah, we all grew up in these, well, we didn't all grow up in horrible situations, but in middle school, you're in a horrible situation.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, what does everybody want more than to be invited to a magical wizarding school?
Yeah,
exactly.
Find out that you have awesome powers.
I mean, I do feel like I took it next level in the sense that I did run around in my backyard with, like, homemade wands and stuff. And at, like, a later age, I was, like, 13. And I had, like, my own sorting hat and, I don't know.
When did you find out that Hogwarts wasn't real?
It's like I knew deep down that it wasn't real. But I did have to have a couple tearful conversations with my mom in middle school about how Hedwig wasn't going to come and deliver me a letter. And that was really rough, you know?
just to get some facts out there.
Yeah.
The first book came out in the UK in 1997.
Doesn't that seem a long time?
I was 4 years old.
And then it was released in the US in 98.
Okay.
But then the movie came out in 2001.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like...
So I was 7 when the first book came out, and then I was about 10 when the movie came out.
Yeah, I was like a fourth grader or whatever, but...
I was turning 10.
Yeah, when it comes to Harry Potter, I read the first one.
Okay.
And I started to read the second one, and I told Ben this. I was like, I'm not committing to this, because I know that there's a couple more books... And I'm not gonna read them. And then they said the movies were gonna come out, and I was like, that'll be fine with me. I'll enjoy the movie universe. And of course, hear all the people say, "Oh, the books are so much better," and just say, "Of course they are."
Yeah.
And just let it be. That's my connection with Harry Potter.
Okay.
I have been to the Harry Potter world in the.
Into
Florida.
And we haven't talked about that before. Oh my God. You never said that you've been, Kurt.
Scandalous.
Yeah.
I didn't tell Alex that I'd been to the Florida Harry Potter.
We just could have swapped store. I don't know.
It's very cool.
It is very
cool. And we'll talk about it as we get into it. The movie, because I have seen the movies and I enjoy them as a movie to watch. The like production design of the movies is very cool. Because they have to set up a world that then stands for 7 or 8 movies.
Mm-hmm.
So they did do a really good job building what the look of what this would be. So that park is very cool because then they just make it fully realized for park guests, which is awesome.
It's kind of a life-changing experience.
What about you, Ben?
What about what?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. Stop looking outside the windows.
There's two horses outside the window. No, I don't know. Harry Potter is the only book that I've read more than once. And I've actually read probably 4 of them at least twice. And I've probably read the first one 3 times. And every time I open up that first book and I see the little picture of the boy in the basket, it's just like, I'm just like, oh yeah. Oh yeah, we're going into Hogwarts. Like, I'm just super excited to like enter this magical world every time. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's like the first book is such a children's book. You know what I mean? It's
As an outsider.
Yeah.
Because I'm not in the Potter verse.
Yet.
I'm very outside of it.
No, we'll change you.
Like, I'll just say this out loud. You guys are rabid and a little bit scary.
Yeah.
To in terms of fandom, because just like some Star Wars heads are scary. A little rabid, and some like some other fans are just as rabid. But it's pretty insane how deep and rich this universe is, and how people just plug themselves into it.
I agree. I feel like in a lot of cases, J.K. Rowling goes too far as like all the content she's like releasing after the fact. I feel like it kind of is like keeping people going. Like, I don't know. It's weird to me. We can talk about that more too, but. I don't know.
Yeah, because a lot of people know that she came out with Pottermore.
Yeah.
Which I'm guessing I hear is just Harry Potter the books, but realized kind of on an online sense.
It is, and then she gives like background stories to like everything and kind of like fleshes out details she doesn't really talk about in the books. But it's like, there's just like new stuff all the time, and it's like people have more and more to like grab onto, and it kind of fuels the crazy. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's because she promised, when she finished the last book, she promised that she was going to release, like, a encyclopedia that had, like, background knowledge on lots of stuff that she kind of didn't fill in the books, and, like, the mythology of the world, and kind of just, like, actually defining spells and all the other terms she uses. But she never did that. Instead, she opened Pottermore. That was kind of, like, her encyclopedia for Harry Potter.
I don't know.
Because there's so many facets to Harry Potter, because you have the books, which are very rich, and they're very they're very steeped in a universe. Like, it's not just Harry Potter, she's creating a universe, and it's just through his eyes. So, and me and Ben talked about it because we watched the movie yesterday. the movie now takes it from Harry Potter's perspective to this omniscient perspective. Also, in the movie context, you got to get those down to a theatrical release.
Yeah.
Which, Goblet of Fire and Order of Phoenix and Deathly Hallows are not at theatrical length books at all.
No.
So you have, of course, you got to cut things out. Like, if they were to make a movie about, like, our favorite game, like BioShock.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I would just throw money at every single movie theater.
I would do what some kids did for Star Wars. I'd buy a ticket for the first showing and then the second showing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I know even if it's bad, I'm gonna watch it again. So I don't. It doesn't matter.
Oh my god.
But you and I both know, even if they got the best writer and the best director,
it wouldn't be the same.
They're gonna have to cut stuff out,
and it wouldn't be the same because of the different perspective. So like we talked about, like, the books of Harry Potter are so good because, especially the first one, because it's through, like, this kid's eyes. And so all the mistakes are hand-waved away because you're only seeing a very limited perspective from a child. So they don't understand everything. And so that's why there's a lot of weird, like, discrepancies and stuff in the book. But then we talk, like you mentioned earlier, as soon as the movie comes out, it's no longer from the perspective of Harry Potter. It's from the perspective of the viewer seeing the whole situation. And then so any mistakes within the magic and stuff kind of, like, is off-putting to you because you're not entering it as a small child viewing the movie anymore. And so you're like, well, that doesn't make sense. Like, Kirk kept putting out, like, the magic is so inconsistent in that first movie. Like, how come when they say up one time, the broom doesn't come, but then the other time it, like, smacks them in the face when they're saying the exact same thing?
Also, like, if it's by feel, how do you differentiate in a movie that you're just watching? How do you differentiate? Oh, well, they set up correctly.
True. Wait, can I ask a serious question about the first movie, though?
Uh-huh.
Why is it considered a Christmas film?
Is it?
Yeah.
No. By who?
Yeah.
ABC
it's
Family.
Often like, mm-hmm.
They play it every Christmas.
You know what? I think it's just a nostalgic.
It's
idea
also.
Of it.
It's
weird?
Also. They mention Christmas once.
Well,
that could
they
be
do
one
it
thing.
In every single book, though.
Every movie, I think, except for
like the
maybe one or two of them have Christmas scenes.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I think also, and this may just be exactly what it is, ABC Family has the ability to purchase the first couple of Harry Potters, so they did. Also, the music of Harry Potter is very, it's not holiday music, but it can be confused for holiday music.
For, like, Halloween? I don't know.
I don't know. Well, maybe it's true. It's kind of, I think it's literally ABC Family's programming going, we need to come up with 25 Christmas movies.
I think it's just a nostalgic feeling of the movies and going back to reading them as a child and that kind of thing. It brings the same ideas of, like, Christmas. When you grow up and move out of your house, like, Christmas is this nostalgic idea. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But
I mean, I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but the release date is, like, mid-November, so it's through that whole holiday season, it was being shown in theaters. I don't know if that's, like, what people attach the holiday season to. Hey, I first saw Harry Potter at the end of November through December.
It could be. Were we going to sort ourselves into some
houses? Oh, yeah, we have to talk about our sorting. So, I figured we could all... Well, this wasn't my idea. I'm not going to rip that off. I think Zach said we could all, like, guess what houses each of us were sorted into.
Because we all took... Apparently,
we took some sort of quiz.
Here's the
some
problem.
Version of quiz.
In this movie, the kids get sorted into houses, which are kind of like sections of the school. And the houses,
dormitories,
they compete with each other to gain points. And spoiler alert for the first movie, Slytherin just gets straight boned over, and everybody's happy about it. Which is kind of the most screwed up thing about that movie. Because
Hold on. Kirk's just saying that. Because he actually got sorted into Slytherin, and he's bitter about it.
You don't know what I got sorted into. And also, I hate Slytherin just as much as everybody because they look like dicks. But the point is this: they have this whole house cup tournament, which is kind of cool because then it keeps the kids involved, keeps them keeping to the rules, and it's also fun. And like Quidditch is involved, and Quidditch is cool.
Yeah,
it's basically broom hockey in the air with no safety. Which there's magic. There should be 100% safety precautions at all times. The fact that these kids play this game and there's just not a bed of feathers to fall on doesn't make any sense to me. But
good point.
but they get sorted into these houses. They play these games. They make these points. At the end of the first movie, spoiler alert, and the book, I'm guessing, Dumbledore basically goes, so Slytherin's ahead, but hold on.
I'm going to give some points out in the last 20 minutes.
Not even the last 20 minutes, the last 10 seconds.
Last 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Gryffindor gets, I think it's 170 points. 50, 50, 60, and 10.
But then he goes, hold on, wait, I did my math wrong. They're just tied. Neville, you can have 10, too.
And then he basically goes, it looks like Gryffindor won. And not just Gryffindor is happy. Everybody's happy.
Except for Snape.
Which doesn't make sense because then even Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff is like, yeah, well, it's not Slytherin, so who cares? Slytherin sucks. So high fives. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. But it's so awesome. All that to say... We sorted ourselves, and the two Potterheads use the Pottermore.
Yes, sorting. That's like the legit sorting. They have a million different quizzes on the internet.
And the non-Potterheads found a pretty legitimate quiz ourselves.
I'm sure
10 questions.
Well, the questions that you guys were asked are from the Pottermore one.
Oh, yeah.
But they just reduced it in length. It's probably the crucial questions.
They're just the most important quizzes, the questions. I would also like to say really fast about these houses that one of my favorite things is not that they're just like, four different types of personalities. Like, they kind of are, but they're actually modeled off of the four original, like, people, right?
Like, in traits they hold dear.
Yeah, like, so that, I think that's really cool that it's like...
And one of them is just a douchebag.
No, he's not. Salazar Slytherin? He's really not, though.
No, he was not. He was what a really interesting character, in my opinion.
Salazar Slytherin? He was so...
He was racist.
Okay, yes, but he was really interesting.
Yeah, he's like...
Okay, well, also, this is based on the cinematic universe, and in the cinematic universe, he's just a dick for no reason.
They wouldn't have so many different, like, powers and spells without him, because of his, like, thirst of, like, knowledge.
He innovated a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
With...
I also like that
he took a turn for the worse.
Yeah, exactly. He kind of got
corrupted.
Okay,
yes, I agree, but still.
To me, because I haven't read the books, it sounds like you guys are making the case for, like, Wizard Hitler, and I don't understand.
He's not Wizard
Hitler. No, like, I don't understand it at all.
Think more of it as, like, mad genius that gets corrupted as he like, pursues knowledge.
All right.
Yeah, he just got a little bit...
It's more
twisted.
Of, like, it's more... It's, like, it's more of, like, the Jedi's that...
Cut down on the mudblood stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more of the Jedi's that go to the dark side because of their curiosity. Like, think of somebody who becomes super powerful and then wants to know more
like
and gets corrupted. Yeah.
All right. Okay, fine.
Well, no, I wouldn't put Salazar on Anakin's level because Anakin kind of just sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, anyways, so I just want to say that I thought that was cool instead of it just being like a personality quiz. It's actually like you're actually like trying to follow in the footsteps of these four great wizards.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they all take that seriously, but I'm glad you appreciate that.
Honestly, I just thought that was a good artistic stroke on Rowling's part. Rowling?
J.K. Rowling?
Rowling? When I say the whole name, it's easy to say, but when I try to just say her last name, I can't do it.
Whatever you say, just say J.K., because either you're saying just kidding or her first name.
So who should we guess about first?
Let's guess about Alex, because Alex is the...
Okay, but I already gave them a clue on accident.
I already know what her house used to be, and I know that it's not anymore. So it used to be Ravenclaw, and it's not anymore.
I would guess Gryffindor, because... I don't know. Everybody wants to be in Gryffindor. Everybody's on Gryffindor.
I don't
want to
be in Gryffindor.
I'm putting her in Hufflepuff, because the main thing of Gryffindor is courageous.
Wow.
Oh,
slam!
Fired.
Slam!
Hell!
Feel that burn.
That was savage.
Right now. Yeah.
I definitely
Definitely.
You've always been a toss up between Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw, and since you're not Ravenclaw, I'm gonna assume Hufflepuff.
Like trivia fact: when I first sorted myself into Pottermore, like way back in the day, a couple years ago,
like we all did.
Yeah, like, I was part of the beta. Even it was like really intense. Anyway, so I got to choose. The Sorting Hat let me choose between Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a 30-minute long quiz, and they're like, we're just not sure. Like, where does your heart tell you?
after 50 minutes of your time, just pick one, because we don't know.
Pretty much. But I was thinking about Luna Lovegood, and I was like, I kind of identify with her, so
of course
I take
you do.
Ravenclaw.
Luna Lovegood's the shit.
Never mind. All right, so Zach, what house do you think Alex is in?
I would have said Ravenclaw.
Yeah.
Or, like, I can see a little bit of Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you?
They sorted me into Gryffindor on Pottermore.
Oh.
Gryffindor.
What?
I'm like, I'm having an identity crisis. Like,
I'm winning this
I've
game.
I've never
we
been
didn't
a Gryffindor.
Establish the rules on.
Kind of gal. But maybe I'm turning into, like, Professor McGonagall. I don't know.
That could make sense. You have, like, you've become, like,
are you
this.
A cat lady.
I am a cat lady.
You've become very protective of things.
Yeah, I'm kind of bossy and I don't know. I don't know. I feel that's like methodical. It's not. Yeah, I feel like it's not that flattering.
She really got on their dicks about being late to class. It's a castle. It's a magic castle, and they're new. Like that's like the worst time to be mean to students. Hey, you're new. You're new. You, one of you doesn't know what magic is. Let's just be real. But you're famous for it. Like that. Yeah. That scene made me a little angry because I was like, hey, like, be cool. Like, also, Ron. He's already got 6 strikes against him because he's a part of the Weasleys and everybody knows who they are. So, I don't know.
And they're troublemakers.
If you guys want to hear a real rant, ask Kirk about the restricted area of the library.
We'll get into that after this.
Oh, maybe gosh. It'll
be like we'll a get into that. Special
bonus feature.
We'll get into that.
Is this like a conversation you guys had last night?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
I can't wait to hear this.
I don't understand. Okay.
All right.
Anyway.
So, wait, should we guess on Zach next?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Zach, I'm going to say you're... Like, if I really thought about it, I would say you're Hufflepuff.
Yeah, 100% Hufflepuff.
But I don't know.
I don't know.
I could see, like, Ravenclaw, but I just feel like, I don't know.
I think Zach thinks that he's a Ravenclaw, but I think everybody else knows that he's a Hufflepuff.
That's like a Hufflepuff. Not that you're, like, lame or a pushover, you're just, like, such a genuine Zach, person.
Your mouth says Ravenclaw, but your beard says Hufflepuff.
I don't know what that means.
So, you know...
Do they have facial hair in
yeah. I don't know.
All those kids are like under 18. Yeah. There. None of them have beards.
You know how like when you take a personality quiz, it can be tainted very easily because your view of yourself is not mm-hmm. the right view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I said I think Zach thinks that he's a Ravenclaw, but all of his friends would be like, no, you're totally a Hufflepuff.
But I also could see you could be like a hidden Gryffindor.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like a Neville or something.
Like if, because this is another thing about the
or
universe.
Like a Hermione.
This is another thing about the universe that's kind of bullshit.
Okay.
The Sorting Hat was gonna put Harry Potter in Slytherin.
There's a reason for that.
Which you find out in a later book, which, sorry to skip ahead.
You find out in the first book.
He has,
in the first?
He has a conversation with it.
No, but he doesn't he doesn't know that he has a piece of Voldemort living inside of him.
Okay,
but
you don't find that out to like book 5 million, spoiler alert.
Wow, we're getting really heavy into the other stories. But doesn't he have another conversation with the Sorting Hat in Dumbledore's office?
He does.
Where the Sorting Hat says, I was gonna put you in Slytherin.
But
you asked to not be put in Slytherin.
There is a hypothesis and conspiracy theory that the only people who get into Gryffindor are people who ask for it.
I don't think that's true because...
I've never heard that and I don't believe that.
Because some people are, it's like, Gryffindor, like the second it's put on their mm-hmm. head.
I think that you have more choice in the say than the book leads you to believe.
Yeah.
Well, okay, well, then the Sorting Hat leads you to believe. I think J.K. Rowling has left... hints throughout the books that the Sorting Hat does not actually have as much power picking as much as the person does.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
I think the person is very influential in what house they're going to be put in.
Then why do we even dick around with this hat? It's just a dog and pony show.
Like, because they have to have a dormitory.
It's tradition.
It's tradition. Okay.
All right. So Zach.
I mean, look at it. Ron Weasley. Would you say, I mean, except for like, he grew up to be worthy of Gryffindor.
No.
Yeah.
But I would not say... For, like, the first couple of books, first 5, 6, he should not be in Gryffindor.
He should 100% be in public wizarding school. Like, the dude's fucking scared of everything that happens in the movie.
Except towards the end of book 7, he really shapes up and then he's...
Yeah,
running.
Exactly.
Yeah, just because he thinks Hermione's
being stolen.
He only does that to get some Hermione.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, honestly, if it's Emma Watson,
no,
I'll face
hold on,
some
hold
fears.
On. He gets it to get some of... Hermione.
Oh!
Nailed it!
I wish I could high five you right now,
That's
Zach.
Awesome.
Boom!
That's awesome.
Oh, wait, okay. So hold on, wait. What house is
what
Zach?
What house
in?
Are you in?
I'm in Gryffindor.
Zach!
Wow, that makes sense.
See, I.
We got some Gryffindors
every
here.
Every test I've taken,
yeah.
I'm usually tied Ravenclaw Gryffindor
okay.
with a very close Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
And Slytherin's usually all the way down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You're not anywhere near a Slytherin.
This one I just took was overwhelmingly Gryffindor
yeah.
with like 93% Gryffindor with the closest being 64% Ravenclaw.
I have a theory about it. She knows it's a phenomenon that a lot of Harry Potter fans are freaking out about right now. And I have a theory about it that I'll talk about after this.
Do we guess you?
Sure.
Because you're closer to Harry Potter fans than I am.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Slytherin.
I would say he's probably Ravenclaw. What little I know...
He would want to be a Ravenclaw.
What little I know about these houses, I would say that Ben's Ravenclaw.
He's like Ravenclaw, but he's like not a good Ravenclaw. You know what I mean?
Like, no, I actually don't know what you mean. That's what,
please explain that.
He's like Peeves the Poltergeist.
What?
So Ravenclaws, I think, are closest to Slytherins in the sense that they have this insane pursuit of knowledge.
Yeah.
Which I think is what Salazar Slytherin had, mm-hmm. which kind of made him go bad, if you will.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're kind of close. So I would say Ben could be like in there between Ravenclaw and Slytherin.
Okay.
Like a good sandwich.
Okay, good.
You're like
yeah.
a Raven.
I right now am a Ravenclaw, and I used to be Slytherin on everything that I took.
There you go.
That's weird.
Yeah, Ben's like the bad Ravenclaw.
No,
like,
but I'll explain. Not a Luna. I'll also explain my theory for why that happened too.
I feel like if you have a friend that became that is sorted into Slytherin, like you should just stop being their friend because aren't they just terrible people?
No,
not all of them.
That's the way that they're pegged in the entire
it is,
movie
but
series.
Harry is a Gryffindor. You know what I mean? Like, of course he's going to hate all the Slytherins.
Because they're
all,
mm-hmm.
Like,
Slytherins aren't inherently bad. It's just the book only highlights...
They're supposed to be
the
foils for the Gryffindors.
Yeah.
They also did get kicked out at the end of the castle. Remember when, like, all of their parents were, like, Death Eaters?
Yeah.
And then mm-hmm. Professor
McGonagall... That's another problem.
Yeah, see...
All of their parents are terrible. Like, what... If you get sorted into... I'm not going to take credit for this joke, because this was on Cracked.com's After Hours.
Okay.
A guy said... If the Sorting Hat puts you in Slytherin, they should take you in the back and just murder you. Because you're a part of the Death Eaters through and through. That's what
yeah.
the movies basically said. It's a horrible thing to say, but it's true. Because all of those kids are dirtbags in the movies, at least.
Well, in the books there are some good ones, I don't know.
Alright, so hold on. Let's guess Kirk real fast.
Alright.
I'm guessing Gryffindor was some Hufflepuffs.
Well, I feel like
that'd be a sweet cereal.
Kirk's all about
Hufflepuffs.
They should have made that. They missed out on an awesome
they did.
Opportunity.
I would buy the shit out of Hufflepuff cereal.
Yeah, me too.
What house?
Oh, this is tricky. Because I could see you being snarky like Ben is snarky, like a bad Ravenclaw.
He's too nice
But
for
I
that.
Feel like you're Gryffindor.
Yeah.
Gryffindor?
Yeah.
Gryffindor with Hufflepuff?
I don't think you're any Hufflepuff. I'd be surprised if you were Hufflepuff.
I can see the Hufflepuff.
Zach, what are you saying?
I'm going to stick by my previous statement earlier. And I just want to be the counter to them. I think you're Slytherin.
Slytherin?
Ooh.
You sneaky bastard.
Kirk doesn't have any of the meanness in him for the Slytherin.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. Kirk's been nothing but pleasant.
I know. Aww. Kirk is like, you never expect him to be that polite until you see him in situations. And you're like, you have more manners than I've ever exhibited in my life. I'm so confused by this.
I don't know.
Like,
why.
He's one of the most opinionated people that you could totally understand him being, like, a jerk. But he's not at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No.
So confusing.
Well, actually, according to this quiz, I am Hufflepuff.
What?
Ooh.
According to this, I'm 0% Slytherin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I am 0% Gryffindor.
Oh, that's weird.
Wow, I didn't expect
weird.
That.
Yeah.
57% Hufflepuff and 43% Ravenclaw.
So you're like a Huffle.
Well, I guess Kirk Raven. Lacks the initiative and drive of a Gryffindor.
That's the thing, because I don't understand the milieu of the houses.
Okay.
Because I didn't read.
Yeah.
I didn't read it. I watched it. But it seems the way I see it is Slytherin is just bad.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the pursuit of power.
Okay.
That makes them
the
way they are.
Yeah, a little bit iffy.
Ravenclaw is the pursuit of, like, knowledge, mm-hmm. but very, very study-based knowledge.
Yes. Books and rules.
Gryffindor is about being courageous, about going out there and doing the best you can. But the way I saw Hufflepuff was just like, let's be cool to each other, man.
Yeah.
Like, let's... Like, why is there so much hostility in the wizarding world? It's like, why can't we have magic. Let's be cool to one another.
You're going to love where
and the
dormitories.
Only Hufflepuff you get to know in the series, really, gets murdered.
That's true.
Yeah.
They don't have, like, a shining Hufflepuff, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why you get to know a few, but it's not for more than, like, a page or
yeah,
two.
Yeah, also, their, like, house is in, like, the basement right next to the kitchen. So they, like, sneak there all the time. And they, 'cause like,
they're all... stoned all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Alex, can you describe the phenomenon that
I don't know
is,
what you're talking about.
You were talking about how everybody's having like this crisis about they're retaking the Harry Potter
as
course,
an adult.
As
yeah.
an adult, right? And they're getting different results.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a theory for this,
okay.
right?
Yes.
And I think that it's been exhibited while... Kirk, you never took it before, right? So
I've never taken it before, but I have talked to friends and told them if I could choose, it would be Hufflepuff, because they seem to be, at least in the movies...
the least involved with all the nonsense. Like, so true. Much nonsense is happening where it's like, a lot of death for no reason. Yeah. Hufflepuff seems to be like, let's chill, guys. Like,
okay, so Zach, you used to be Hufflepuff, right?
And now no, I used to be Ravenclaw.
Ravenclaw. And now you're Gryffindor?
I'm very close between the two of them still, but okay. Gryffindor pulled ahead.
That makes sense. Alex, you used to be Ravenclaw.
Yeah.
And you've moved more Gryffindor, right?
Apparently.
And then I used to be Slytherin and moved more Ravenclaw.
Okay.
So, like, I honestly think that it's just evidence of, like, the progression as people and our personalities as we got older. So we took this quiz when we were younger and immature. And, like, Zach, I could see you as, like back when you just wanted to know a whole bunch of knowledge, right? You just wanted to learn everything. And, like, you loved being in college and taking classes and reading books and everything. And you were very passive, kind of, in those respects. And you've kind of taken, like, more drive and initiative. And, you know what I mean? You've taken more courageous steps of, like, moving out of the house and this kind of stuff. And it's, like, kind of changing who you are. And, Alex, you used to be, like, Ravenclaw, hardcore study books. You were a dork.
I feel like I still am in high school.
Right, but now you like have these weird compassionate traits that you've like
weird compassionate. No, but like traits.
Yeah, it's really weird that you're compassionate. I didn't want to say it out loud. But gosh darn it, it is very weird
how. No, but okay, so I said that wrong, but like your compassionate side has developed like greatly. Yeah, you're upset with me.
I'm not upset with you.
She's confused.
I know what you mean though. I don't know that you're saying it correctly, but I understand that like as adults now, like we have different responsibilities than we did as like teenagers reading like a book about magic, you know?
And I used to be Slytherin, right? And I like totally can relate to just wanting to know everything and be better than everybody else, you know what I mean? But like being married to you and like going through life in general has mellowed me out a ton.
You're less dangerous.
And moved me a lot more towards just like learning in general into the Ravenclaw area.
That is a good theory because like I said, I wasn't involved in the Harry Potter universe like at all.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I looked at those questions from my like 12-year-old self, I would answer them completely different.
Yeah.
Because in that list, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's like, what do you hold more valuable? If you die, what do you want people to say? Blah, 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 blah. And all like when I was younger, like my priorities were so different. Now it's so much more of like, I just want everything to be less aggressive.
Yeah.
Especially now in the current climate. Like if we want to talk about something real other than Harry Potter. It's like so I just want especially now in my older age, just like let's mellow out because there we can reach understanding.
Yeah.
Knowledge is important, that's important. But let's just keep it cool and together. Like you mentioned, like I'm very polite. That's true. But I don't have time for like stupidity.
Yeah.
And I don't have time for just like stubbornness of being stubborn.
Yeah.
So it's also, and like with your theory, Harry Potter, like you said, we grew up with Harry Potter. Harry Potter is our childhood growing up, and now we're going to give it to our kids, but they're going to have it all together right now.
Yeah, it's going to be different.
But we're in the, I feel the same way with Toy Story. We lived the story of Harry Potter as it happened.
Yes.
So we relate to the idea of growing up with it. As opposed to like, oh, well, he's just the kid who's going to be courageous and Ron's scared and Hermione knows everything. We're more like, no, we got to watch them go from 10-year-old awkward kids to these 18-year-olds. And at least with the movies, now Ron and Hermione are together.
Yeah.
Harry and that one Weasley broad, who is supposed to be, from what I read, is supposed to be like drop dead gorgeous, and they got plain Jane.
Are you kidding me? She's so pretty,
dude.
What?
First off,
Zach, you have the worst taste in women.
Okay, Zach, she's very beautiful, and no, you don't, Zach. That's so mean.
You just got sniped, bro. Just whoop-ah! So the point is this. My point about that was just they couldn't get a drop dead gorgeous female because then that would take away from Emma Watson.
Also,
it was a total TV.
Okay, first of all, originally
the best part about my burn is the fact that Zach can't say anything about my taste in women because if he does, he insults Alex.
That's very true.
I wasn't gonna. No, like,
I know
what?
You wouldn't have said that, Zach, because you're a nice person. Also,
I didn't even think
when they
that.
Picked
I was pissed.
Emma Watson and the actress that played Ginny Weasley, they were like 12-year-old little kids.
Yeah,
that they weren't plan. Supposed to be sexual people at all, and then they grew up to be like teenage.
And then
girls.
Emma Watson became sexual, and that other girl became more plain. And then they had this cross section where it's like, well, isn't Hermione supposed to be kind of plain and like kind of not
ugly? Think about
ugly.
How powerful Ginny is as a person and a witch. She does so much awesome magic.
Yeah, but Harry
not
was supposed
not
to
in the
end
movies.
Up with, Harry was supposed to end up with the hot one, and Ron was supposed to end up with the ugly one. That's all that matters about females at the end of the day.
But wow, it's true. It's true for movies. But in the movie universe, she doesn't do dick.
Yeah, that's true. She's a very like weird passive character. But in the book, she like is a good person.
Kicks ass from what I hear. So the books are more rich. That's the problem.
Yeah.
The movies are very surface level.
That's true. I didn't think of it that way. Good point.
It's because you had J.K. Rowling writing the books and another person writing the screenplays for the movies.
Very true.
And another person directing the movies.
Exactly.
Which could
they
be
highlight
two
different aspects of the characters.
Yes.
Give more light to certain characters. Yeah.
Very true.
The only thing, I mean, we could do closing comments about the Sorcerer's Stone. I do not like the movie very much.
Yeah.
Because,
it was horrible when
because
I rewatched it.
They're 10-year-olds and they cannot act yet.
No, they can't.
And the CGI was 2001 CGI and it's apparent.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they lucked into was that these kids would be there the entire time. That's the only positive thing about the first movie is all of these kids are going to stick with this until the end, except for that one Slytherin dude who got arrested before the last movie was made.
Oh, yeah, one of the weirdos.
Crab or Goyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I mean, other than him and Dumbledore, did anyone else get recast? Like, anyone else?
I don't think so.
Throughout the Harry Potter movies. I think that was it.
There is the theory that, what's her name? She's black in the books. She wants to get all up on Ron when he in Goblet of Fire.
Oh.
There's a scene in one movie where there's a character that sits behind Harry, which implies that it's this one female character.
Okay.
Then in the next movie, she has a little bit of interaction with Ron, and they completely recast it as a white girl.
Oh.
That's the only one that I had heard about, which is kind of like, that's a little
weird.
Like,
why do you have to do that? Yeah.
But
interesting. Huh. Yeah.
I don't like the movie, the first movie. I read the first book, but it was okay. I didn't love it enough to keep reading.
I loved the first book. I thought it was so good. And I think she's a master at writing. I think she did an amazing job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The way that she keeps it within character perspective the whole time, I will always bring that up. Because I never noticed it when I was a child, because it just fit my perspective so well. But going back and reading as an adult, it's such a children's book. But it's just so well done as a children's book. I don't know. I like that a lot. The movie was horrible. It's not good when you like Draco Malfoy because he's the only good actor
at
that child age. Mm-hmm. I liked him in the movie because he acted well. And that was upsetting.
You know an actor is good at 10 when you want to throttle a 10-year-old and he's the villain?
If you watch his facial expressions, he has so much control over the correct responses to things. Where Harry Potter and them just have no facial expressions the whole time.
Well, that's because I'm pretty sure he was raised in a family of actors, if I remember correctly. Whereas Harry Potter, the kid that played Daniel Radcliffe, just some random kid they met. I think his father had connections to the acting. I think he was a musician or something like that.
He had connections to the production.
Oh.
Yeah. But other than that, he wasn't raised in an acting family.
Yeah.
So I think it just...
No, Draco would killed it as the only 10-year-old who killed it in that... What?
Draco. You said, like, Dracoy.
Dracoy, because it's about... Draco, yeah. And then, of course, Maggie Smith is... What did I say? I said Draco. What? I can't say it. I'm going to leave the room.
Why didn't they come out with Draco Malfoy? Draco.
They should have.
But anyways, Maggie Smith was amazing in the
She's
movie.
Amazing.
She's
but
phenomenal.
Maggie Smith and whoever played
and OG
Drake
Dumbledore. Boy. OG Dumbledore killing it.
I know.
Yes.
He was so cute.
I didn't really like him in the movie.
OG Dumbledore killing
but
it.
But he's so much more like the book Dumbledore.
Yeah, the like second Dumbledore is so much more intense.
Yeah, that was
he's abrasive and he's
yeah,
just,
he like
rude.
Like huffs around and it's like that's
like there's one scene in particular in the Goblet of Fire, not to like just totally derail this, but in the Goblet of Fire when Harry's name comes out of that and they bring Harry to the back room
and he like
and he storms in throwing shit all over the place. He's like, Harry Potter, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? In the book
because
it says
because he's worried that he's gonna die.
Yeah, okay, sure. In the book
he just like
it says this specifically. Dumbledore calmly walked across the room and asked Harry if he had put his name into the Goblet of Fire. Calmly.
Yeah, he was just like, Harry, did you do it? And it's like, Harry said no, so I believe him.
Cool. Because Dumbledore and Harry had such a good relationship that Dumbledore would be like, I know Harry didn't do this. There's something going on.
Yeah, exactly.
I felt that the OG Dumbledore played him too old.
That's yes.
He was old as hell. He can't play anyone else but old.
We live in a world of magic. He can be 1,000 years old. It doesn't matter. He doesn't need to play like he's 1,000 years old.
I made this comment last night. He looked like a fake old man in the movie, and I was very
confused.
That's
really mean, first of all. Second of all, they don't have immortality unless you have, like, Philosopher's Stone, unicorn blood, horcruxes, all of which led to bad things,
You can't be immortal in this universe except for these several things that you find out later.
But did they end up well for Voldemort? No, they didn't.
But he was of an extended age, I thought.
Wow, Dumbledore? He was pretty old. He was 100.
I thought he was well into his hundreds.
Yeah, he was.
These closing comments turned into a whole other argument.
Anyway, we could talk about Harry Potter forever.
Well, no, me and Zach had the full argument on the thread.
So I'll do my closing comment.
Comment, closing.
All right, so for my closing comment, whenever I read the first Harry Potter book and watch the first movie, whenever I'm opening it to the boy that had lived, the first chapter, or turning the movie on and it's Dumbledore taking the lights out of Privet Drive.
Oh, yeah.
It's always like, and Kirk, you can relate to this, it's like turning on Jurassic Park and you hear the music, the da-da-da-da-da, and you just see the gate of Jurassic Park opening because you're with the characters as they're going into Jurassic Park for the first time. It's just like this epic moment, and it's like, I remember the very first moment, like, I have this vivid memory of the first moment I opened my Harry Potter book to read it.
Aww.
And every time I read it, it brings me right back to that very moment.
Do you cry?
So, not at that moment, but I typically, there's certain parts in every book that make me cry.
Quick question.
True.
Was this moment so, like, awesome because, oh no, wait, you didn't grow up a Christian, never mind.
Yeah.
I was going to say, was it so awesome because you weren't allowed to read it because of magic for the majority of your life?
Those parents were the worst. Absolute worst. No.
Very true.
I didn't have those parents. I wasn't a Christian. So.
That's me with the Toy Stories. If I watch any Toy Story, I'm going to cry. Doesn't matter which one. Depends. It depending on which one just means which point am I going to cry at. So.
You guys are cute.
So, Alex, closing statement.
Closing statement. I think the first movie is awesome just because it's so sentimental. Obviously, I know it's not, like, the best produced or acted movie. It just, like, will always be great to me because it just means something. But, yeah, first book, I think it's mainly a children's book for me now. Like, I don't know. The series definitely progresses, like, as you read another book, they get more and more adult. So, like, going back to the first one, it's more for sentimental reasons, not just, like, to read a good book. I don't know. But yeah, first book, it's awesome.
I totally forgot. Yes. Has anybody seen the new illustrated Sorcerer's Stone?
I haven't.
You saw it with me in the store.
Oh, yeah.
It is awesome. It is the whole entire...
I'm dropping money.
It is the whole entire Sorcerer's Stone book illustrated with, like, watercolored illustrations through the whole book. Like, every...
I need to buy another bookshelf.
Like, just for this... Like, every other page is just a beautiful illustration.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
Like a real children's book. Like, they only have, like, a sentence on each page.
No,
like...
they have... It's the whole entire book.
I know, babe, but they only have, like, one sentence and, like, a picture and, like, you know what I
mean? Oh, yeah, and then, like, a whole page.
Like, the page that has the watercolor is just one... Okay.
Yeah, so it's like a children's book and they have, like, a paragraph in it.
Yeah,
awesome. I will say it's mainly a movie watcher because I watched all these movies on Blu-ray. Because I bought them for my brother, and then I asked to watch them one time before he keeps them forever.
Mm-hmm.
Watching them from the beginning to end, just one after another, the first movies are just clearly different than the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely for exposition. The only reason you'd watch those two is so that you remember, okay, this is how it started, this is what it is, and then you cut into Azkaban...
Uh-huh.
And then from there, it's like the cinematic universe as opposed to the book universe. So it's, I don't know, it's just not, it just doesn't do it the same way as it did when I was 10. But
I think one thing that the first movie does that's like different, like you were saying, is it tends to just take scenes from the book and then highlight them in a movie form in order to like relate to people who have already read the book. Where I think when you hit the third movie and onwards, it's more of like a movie arc. Where they retold the story in movie form instead of just taking specific scenes and highlighting.
Yeah, I think they just realized, like I said, like we can't make these because Goblet of Fire is going to have to be two movies.
Order of Phoenix would have to be two movies. Deathly Hallows, even though they made that into two movies, and I was like, why?
Yeah.
Why did you do that? So it's, I don't know. Yep. Harry Potter!
Yay!
Harry Potter.
Yo, wizard.
And that was episode 8, An Optimistic Lady, The Sorcerer's Stone, from the podcast Apathetic Gentleman. If you're interested in that show, just go to apatheticgentleman.com or apatheticpod on Twitter and see what we're up to there. We just did a review, not really a review, a discussion about Batman versus Superman, and it's very long and unedited, and we get into the nitty-gritty about it. So thank you for listening to the whole thing, or a little bit, or some. I'm really appreciative of the people that do listen. A lot of people are making stuff, and if you're listening, thank you for supporting such a dumb little project that me and my brother decided to do so long ago. We are going to be making more of these, and we're going to be making more of Blue Balls, so just pay attention to AsherBrothersPodcast.com. And if you're interested in anything I am doing, it's at Kirk Has Glasses on anything social media. I'm going to try and start some other stuff as well, just trying to keep busy. You know, you get busy living or you get busy dying, you know, and Morgan Freeman said that in one of the best movies of all time. So thank you and have a great week, day, month, year, and do what makes you happy.